But right now, moving to our next interview, I want to welcome back to the program Richard Eskow, former Wall Street executive, now a fellow with the Campaign for America's Future. And Richard, thank you so much for joining us on the program tonight.
Oh, you bet. Always happy to be here.
Now, you've written some articles recently that I thought had a lot to say about, you know, some of the current events with economics and what the country's been going through of late. And one has to do with the January jobs report, and the other with the whole issue of holding accountable the big banks and Wall Street financial institutions responsible for crashing the economy, and a new task force that was initiated by President Obama announced during his State of the Union speech. But let's maybe first go here to the January jobs report. We had more than 200,000 jobs created in the private sector. That's news just came out a few days ago. And while this is good news, in a recent article, you warned that too much self-congratulations by the Obama administrations and their supporters on this slow recovery plays into the right-wing agenda by lowering expectations and transforming high levels of unemployment and underemployment that we have now as the new normal. Maybe get your perspective on those numbers we saw in the January jobs report.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what we saw were numbers in the 240,000 range after a long period of very slow job growth and very fast growth in the workforce. So, you know, we're going into an election year, and I understand if you're a politician running for re-election, you want to emphasize the positive, or if you support a politician, group of politicians running for a re-election, you want to support the positive. But the risk here is that we make more of these numbers than they really are, and we lose the political pressure to do what really needs to be done. And let me turn that into, you know, some real context here. We had a month which everybody's celebrating because it was better than expected. We created 243,000 jobs instead of the projected 150,000. But with the jobs that have been lost and the new workers coming into the workplace and the number of people who have given up in despair, we should be creating 400,000 jobs a month. And if we did, it would still take 3 years to get back to what's always been considered acceptable levels of employment. And if you add to that the fact that we don't know that this rate, even this rate of 240,000, will continue, and that it's shaky because, you know, if Europe goes bad or another U.S. bank goes down or something, it could all reverse itself. I think it's very, very risky to hype these numbers as more than they are, which is one month where we didn't fall as far short as we thought we would. We need to say, well, why has that happened? What would it take to make these numbers better? And how can we get that done?
Now, one of the points you made that I think was very important was that you fault President Obama for not proposing bolder economic stimulus programs on the scale that's really needed here. And you're concerned that these half measures won't work and in the end discredit the overall approach of government intervention in the economy in the philosophy of Keynesian economics.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I emphatically agree with what I wrote. And what I wrote was exactly that. In fact, it's already happened. What we saw in the first 2 years of the president's term was that he proposed a stimulus package that many of his advisors and many of us outside felt was too small, and that what was too much of what was there were tax breaks that weren't going to be effective, as opposed to let's spend money the way FDR did with the WPA in the 1930s. Let's give people jobs. Let's get them to work. Let's jumpstart the economy. So the fact is, when the president and his supporters say he's created 3 million jobs, for example, they're right. There's no question jobs were being lost when he came in. He reversed that, but he did too little. And so in 2010, in the election, what we saw were Republicans saying, well, look at these unemployment numbers in the 9% range. The stimulus stuff clearly doesn't work. And what the president needed to do was to say, I didn't do enough because I didn't think it would go through Congress. Now, finally, he's listening to the advice of people outside the administration, those of us who've been saying, propose jobs and let the Republicans block you if they want to, but he's not proposing big enough. So what he should really be doing, in my opinion and the opinion of a lot of people, is going in front of the public and saying, the overall public, and saying, we can get America back to work, but it's going to take this much expenditure. This is not about the deficit. We'll worry about the deficit later, but we'll have a huge deficit like they're seeing in Europe if we don't get people back to work, if we cut instead of focusing on growth. So we need jobs, not cuts. Let's get out there and get it done. And if the Republicans block him, which they will, because they would block, you know, he keeps proposing these modest, relatively tiny things, and they kill those. So why not tell the public what's really needed to get things going? And if they block him, he can go back and say, you know what? This is what it takes. They blocked me. Give me a Congress I can work with, and I'll get it for you. But by muddying his message like this with half measures, he's really going to lose, but he's not going to lose in an effective way.
Richard Eskow, we saw a conversation begin after the Super Bowl advertisement that featured Clint Eastwood in an ad for Chrysler that really talked about the nation coming together to help the auto industry out in Detroit, and now it's on the upswing. But there's a lot of criticism of the whole notion that of government intervention in the economy, as President Obama did with the auto industry. Now, I believe GM, General Motors, came back as the world's largest manufacturer. Certainly a lot of people in the Obama administration and the president himself are proud of that fact. But you have a lot of Republicans on philosophical grounds that are totally opposed to the fact that the government did bail out Chrysler and Chevrolet, GM, at a point when they were just about to go bankrupt, which could have generated about, you know, a million or more job losses. You want to mention, you know, whatever you're thinking about this conversation that opened up after yesterday's Super Bowl?
Well, you know, I mean, and remember, Clint Eastwood is a Republican. He was just saying what was on his mind. And by the way, Chrysler had a great ad last year in the Super Bowl. I can't remember what it was now. But, you know, the fact is that, you know, Republicans don't mind bailing out banks, but they don't want to bail out American workers. The auto industry bailout is a success story, and we could have a lot more like that. And it involved the president not being shy about directly managing the car company until it was back on its feet. He should have taken the same attitude toward the banks, but instead the Republicans are proposing the same failed policies. If the Republicans had had their way, then the entire American auto industry would have been wiped out forever. The job numbers would be even worse. Michigan and the Midwest would be a ghost town, and they'd be blaming that on Obama. So, you know, the fact is, what Obama needs to be saying is, look what I did for the auto industry. That worked. Now we need to do that for a couple more parts of the country, too, and we can get this country going again.
This is WPKN Radio in Bridgeport, Connecticut. We're speaking tonight with Richard Eskow, former Wall Street executive, now a fellow with the Campaign for America's Future. And I was interested to read, Richard, in one of your recent articles about the issue of holding big banks accountable. Recently, President Obama appointed New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman as co-chair of the Justice Department Mortgage Fraud Investigation Unit. Attorney General Eric Schneiderman had been a critic, really, of some deals that the administration was trying to cut about mortgage fraud, and it seems like they took him under their wing with the promise of some more aggressive investigations and prosecutions. And there have been some lawsuits. There have been some prosecutions initiated against the Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and so on over mortgage fraud. But what's your overall take on why it's taken so long for this administration to move to accountability for the big banks and Wall Street firms that crashed the economy? And what do you make of this move now on the cusp of the election year, you know, just before a national presidential election for Obama, all of a sudden to, you know, at least it seems to at least turning the screws on the banks now at this late date.
Well, you know, I think the question, the answer's implied in your question, and I agree with it, which is it's an election year, number one. Look, we have a situation where the president was elected at a historic moment with a historic mandate to force real change on Wall Street and to hold criminals accountable, to track them down and hold them accountable. He didn't do that. That's a historic disappointment. I feel that's a terrible thing that he acted the way he did for whatever reason. And, you know, the Justice Department's record of non-prosecution of bank, you know, bankers, even in cases where the evidence seemed overwhelming, is extraordinarily disappointing and even shameful. But I think a couple things happened to change the dynamic. One was Occupy Wall Street. The energy that got Barack Obama elected in 2008 was, first of all, totally dissipated away from him, as we saw in the 2010 election. Young people voted in lower numbers in 2010 than they did in 2006, before most of them had heard of Barack Obama. So that energy went away from him, and a lot of it was galvanized by Occupy Wall Street, either directly or by the emotions and, you know, feelings that Occupy generated and the change in the debate to economic fairness. So the president recognizes that, and I think he and his advisors realize that they can't pretend. He stopped saying what I think is one of the worst things, least credible things he's ever said. He had this standard line, speech line, Main Street and Wall Street rise and fall together. That's just flatly not true, number one. So he realizes he has to do something, and he realizes now the level of public outrage that bank crimes have not been prosecuted. So now, in the meantime, it is statute of limitations may have run out on some crimes and so on, but to this day, essentially, till a couple weeks ago, he had been pushing a very cushy, yet another cushy deal with the banks, because we've had a lot during his administration, as well as the Bush administration, where they could write a small check, relatively speaking, to get away from big crimes. Now he realizes, because Eric Schneiderman in New York, where a lot of the big banks are headquartered, and Kamala Harris in California, wouldn't sign on to the deal, he realized he had to deal with them. He realized he was dealing with a different national mood. A lot of activist groups trying to keep the pressure on. So I think now he's trying to, you know, weave his way through placating the banks on the one hand, because, you know, he does get elected in a system where corporate money drives elections. So I think he's dealing with that on the one side, and on the other, public outrage. And I think it's the job of the public to keep the pressure on the president and other politicians to make sure justice is served. You know, you mentioned prosecutions. Well, there's the lawsuit from the state of New York, but that's a lawsuit. We need, in addition to lawsuits, which is great, and I'm all for it, but we also need to know that criminal investigations will be made and that individual bankers who committed crimes will be prosecuted. More than 1,000 big bankers went to jail after the savings and loan scandal, which was a tiny fraction of the scope of what went on in this decade.
Richard, what do you think of Eric Schneiderman as co-chair here? He has certainly fought for sort of preventing the banks from getting a free pass in the mortgage fraud investigations that were ongoing of the many states attorney generals. Do you think him being one of several co-chairs of this new unit at the Justice Department will make a difference in holding accountable the big banks?
Well, I think he's done a great job up to now, and he's been a hero, and I think that, you know, he's a co-chair with several other people whose records have been terrible. So, you know, with the enforcement officer at the SEC that keeps letting the banks off, with the guy at Justice Department who's sleeping on the job and who went on 60 Minutes and said what they did was wrong but not illegal, which is demonstrably untrue. So Schneiderman, number one, has his hands full dealing with getting things done. So I think we have to keep the pressure on externally so that he has a better hand. And then, you know, people are speculating all over the internet, you know, have they bought off Schneiderman? Have they done a deal? Well, we have no reason to believe he's inclined to be bought off, so let's keep the pressure on for the best deal we can and assume, as I assume, that that gives him a stronger hand to negotiate. And believe me, if anybody's been bought off, a lot of people will react to that. But there's no reason right now not to think that that Schneiderman, who just the other day initiated that lawsuit, is not, you know, fighting on the side of the Angels. So that's what I'm going to assume unless I hear otherwise.
The New York Times recently had an investigation where they discussed in detail how the federal government has a systemic pattern of letting the big banks off for their violations of the law, criminality, ethical violations. And it seems that regardless of the presidential administration, we have a free pass for big banks when they violate the law. How can that be remedied, do you think?
Well, I think number one is if, you know, listeners who are liberal, Democrat, you know, are listening right now, the number one thing is, you know, and I get yelled at this sometimes about this at parties, we've got to let go of attachment to a party or a president, at least insofar, not that I want the, it would be horrifying if Mitt Romney became president, but insofar as we have to understand, they're not going to lead on this one. Outside, the public has got to lead them. They will not be the leaders. They have, by and large, a very disappointing record on this stuff. There's some terrific people in Congress, but overall, you know, national leaders have been extraordinarily disappointing. And, you know, when a person becomes elected president, they're put in charge of large bureaucracies that are filled with people that have been doing exactly what that New York Times article described for decades. So they would have to come in, a president would have to come in with a determination to shake things up, clean house, get some prosecutions, get things moving, and Obama didn't do that. So we have to pressure him and them to begin the process, number one, of indicting bankers so they're not tempted to do it again or keep doing it if they're doing it right now, and number two, to really rebuild the regulatory culture of Washington and of the country, which means the president getting on television saying regulators are the cops on the beat and we should be respecting them just the way we respect first responders who protect us from burglaries. And that's part of the discussion we should be having.
Big banks and Wall Street firms have so much money and so much power and influence in Washington and state capitals that a lot of people are cynical that we can really change the structure here. There's the view of many that we have a permanent secret government, pulls all the strings, and the parties are really just, you know, so much superficial fluff that the real power behind the White House and Congress are these huge banks and financial institutions. How do you think we can overcome that?
Well, I would phrase that a little differently. I would say that those banks have enormous power over both political parties, and that the way we change it, I mean, I think it's a sort of multi-front. One is we fight back every chance they get, because I think at this point, for example, Obama's getting the idea, and it has to be reinforced, that he will not be reelected unless he takes the banks on. Not because I say so or you say so, but because that's where the public mood is right now. So one way to diminish the bank's power is by making it clear to at least one party that they can't have it both ways. Another way is to push for a constitutional amendment or some other way to get money out of politics, because right now we have a system of corporate politics, plain and simple. So those two actions are urgently needed. And I think the other, again, just keep the pressure up issue by issue by issue, whether it's Democrats or the president wanting to compromise on Social Security, whether it's the big banks, keep fighting them. And, you know, don't despair. I mean, I think the cynicism is the most destructive thing we can do. If we're convinced that the banks have already won, then we won't fight. The public has a lot more power than it realizes. And just as the Arabic public realized it had a lot more power than it knew when the Arab Spring happened, and that fight's not over either, but you know, I think the idea is we've got to be prepared to do what it takes to fight this banking and corporate government system and be really strong. I mean, nonviolent, but strong about it, saying, you know, if we have to go into the street, we'll go into the street, because otherwise they do win.
Richard Eskow, thanks so much for being with us tonight. Leave our listeners with a web address so they can read your articles and others on the Our Future website for the Campaign for America's Future.
www.ourfuture.org.
And they can look for your name, Richard Eskow, and some of the other great writers over there.
You bet.
I appreciate you making time for us, Richard. Thanks for your excellent work. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks, Scott.
Bye-bye. Bye. That's Richard Eskow, former Wall Street executive, now a fellow with the Campaign for America's Future.